Aleph, Halacha Aleph, which talks about which came, when you need legal, what certain discussions about which things do or don't need legal. What we're gonna talk about today is we're gonna start a discussion about dryers, in particular about spray dryers. And the discussion what we're gonna talk about is the part we're gonna talk about today, which is how we connect this in, is how do you know whether a kli needs libun or hakol? The rule is, if you use something right on fire, then you need libun. If you use something, you cook up a pot of soup that was treif, then you need hakol. What's the rules? We're going to try to clarify what those rules are, when need libun and when need hakol, and that will help us understand whether a spray dryer, and then we will eventually branch into other dryers. How do you know whether the dryer you're looking at needs libun or needs hakol? That's the first question.
If I'm not mistaken, you spoke about it here when you came.
That's very possible.
Yeah.
And what we're going to then, we will, once we pass that decision, we will say, okay, now if we have a spray dryer that needs hakola, how will you do that? Okay, that's for sure not going to be today. But that will be a later part, is once we're there. But really, the connection we have to halacha d'aleph is we're trying to understand when do you need libun and when do you need hakola. Once we've said that there are cases that need hakola, then we'll say, how do you pull it off? How do you actually get it to the kasher? That's a practical question. That's sort of like an outgrowth of this discussion. Okay, now, before I start, I have to just remind you, we're in halacha d'aleph. Halacha aleph, we already had that for kli cheres, we need to do libun. That's a completely different thing. If you use a kli cheres for hot food, you need libun no matter what. That's not what we're talking about. Okay? We're talking about if you did, I was in a company on Wednesday, and they have huge pieces of equipment that are made out of cheres. Okay, were they to ever need to catch it? We can't. Even though it's not on a fire and it's not a dry product, they need libun, but they couldn't catch it, they can't make it. But we're talking about something that's used right on the fire. So when does it need libun and when does it need hakol? So it turns out, okay, the way we're going to organize it, that there's going to be four rules, okay, as to what makes it decide if it needs libun or needs hakol. But we're going to talk about a little bit about the rules and some application and a topic discussion. Okay, the first is, this is something we've talked about before. You only need libun if the product that you're putting on is dry. I put a piece of meat, I put a piece of toast, I put something dry onto a thing, then it needs libun. If you're using a liquid, no matter what, you don't need libun.
No matter how much liquid?
No matter how much. And really, the point is, even though the liquid is isser, we had spoke about this a few weeks ago, that there are those who hold that if the liquid, you need libun if the thing that touches the pot is the isser. Usually, when you make a soup, what's touching the pot is the water, and the meat would be floating around. But they say, were the liquid itself to be the iser, then they say, then you need libun also. Okay? That's not the din. If that's not the din, the shakun is a shita, but that's not the din. The din is that if you only need libun if it's a solid thing touching the cleat.
And the liquid doesn't have to be water, it could be oil.
Yes, liquid could be anything. Yes, it could be oil, anything like that. Yes, correct. That's a good point. But you only need libun if there's a salad. And within that, there's a discussion that's not for now.
A frying pan.
That's what I was about to say. We're not going to talk about now. That's then much later on. Is what happens if you put something directly on the fire with a little bit of oil or a minimal amount of oil? How much oil is considered that there is liquid in the pan? Okay, we're not talking about that now. Okay, that's not in the case of the shayla. Later shayla about a machmas. It's mamshet a din later on as to which things. When do you say that a frying pan? But when I say oil, I mean if you're deep frying something. Okay, if you're deep frying something, you won't need liquid. Okay, the thing is sitting in a big container full of oil.
Cooking with oil, right?
Even if that oil would be animal fat, and even if you went to McDonald's 10 years ago when they used to use real animal fat, and you wouldn't need liquid for that frying. Okay, that's the first thing. That's of all the rules, the most straightforward of all the rules. Okay, that's the second rule is like this. It has to be that the cooking is being done either on a fire or very close to a fire. If you do the cooking on another heat source, not that it's on fire, it's on a different kind of a heat source, or you're very far away from the fire. For example, I take a piece of meat and I put it onto my plate. Okay, forget about that, it's a cliche. I take a piece of meat and I put it onto my plate. That plate does not need libun. Even though it's a dry product going right into my food, it's not on the fire. You don't need libun. The way the question, the kind of words they use is that if the fire pushes the bliya deep into the kli. Okay, so if you have a fire, you could need libun. If you're not on a fire, you're on a counter, you won't need libun. So a simple example of that is when you have an oven belt. The belt in which the food goes through the oven, that needs leaving. But as soon as the food plops off that belt and goes onto the next belt to move around the plant, that doesn't need leaving because that's not on the fire. You now, it's only the one belt that's in the fire that potentially needs leaving. Once you leave the fire and you're off to a different belt, you don't need leaving.
Good reason to recommend multiple belts.
All
over the place.
Okay, well, it's
stop it soon.
That one belt that's in the fire is the one that causes the most problems. That's the one that usually needs to be replaced. Okay, now, but in the game, to us, so that sounds like a simple enough thing. But this is the one that causes us the most issues. But let's first get a simple thing through. If you heat something, industrially, they don't always heat things with fire. It's common you can heat things with steam, hot water, hot oil, or even hot air going over a steam pipe. And what they'll do is, if you cook up a kettle of ketchup, they don't have a fire burning on the bottom of that. It's a jacketed kettle. So what's heating up this kettle? What's heating this up? The fire is 500 feet away. There's steam surrounding this kettle. That kettle's not on the fire. That's all they do with hot oil. Or they do it with steam, with these steam pipes, like a radiator in a house. There'll be steam pipes running.
Hot oil
could be in the jacket because hot oil
usually
can get
is that
hotter.
What it is?
No, usually it's hot water in the jacket.
Right.
The hot oil can get hotter than hot water. Mm-hmm. If you want to get a hotter temperature, use hot oil.
What type of oil?
Mineral oil. Right. It can get much hotter than not cooking oil, like a mineral oil.
Right.
And it can get much hotter. So the oil, if you have steam coils, you just have steam pipes going back and forth, and you blow the hot air over this thing, so you can make the thing burning hot, but there's no fire there. It's just heat coming from a steam coil. Those things are not considered to be on the fire. What is on the fire is a fire. Okay, but there's another example of a fire, which is an electric coil. If you have and this comes up in extruders, as we see it, this kind of a thing. An extruder is, if you want to make something into a shape, you want to make Cheerios or pasta or anything in a shape, you make a mess, you make your batter, and then you push it through something that's cut to that shape. Let's say the Cheerio, it will be cut to the shape of a hole, and then as it's coming out, it's being sliced off to be just the right size anymore. Okay, that's called an extruder. Okay, it extrudes into a shape. Some extruders have a heating element inside the extruder to help the product stay hot and flow through. If it gets too cold, it won't flow through. So they have an electrical right there keeping the extruder hot. Now, there may be a reason why they don't need leaving, but potentially that extruder needs leaving because it's right on the fire. Now, you wouldn't see the big burning gas flame over there, but there's an electric coil in the extruder to keep the thing hot, which will mean that potentially that thing that's being extruded needs, if you want to capture it, needs leaving. And we'll hear a possible exception in a second, but that would be the simple understanding that needs leaving. Okay, now. The question is like this. And here is where we come to us. This is the crux of a Shiloh for a spray dryer. If you have a spray dryer, I'm sorry, I should have brought a diagram. If you have a spray dryer, here's the dryer. This is the dryer, and the product's coming in over here. Okay, now, there's a furnace someplace which is providing the heat for this spray dryer. Okay? You can put the furnace in a bunch of different places. Sometimes they put the furnace here on the floor. Okay? And then they put a pipe up over here to blow the hot air in. Sometimes they put the furnace on a ledge that's like two-thirds of the way up, put a furnace over here. Sometimes they put the furnace right here. The furnace is right here as the product is going in. It's a special kind of a spray dryer that the furnace is right there as the product is coming in. It's being even blown in. It gets a push from the furnace that's right there. Or there's a furnace will be over here. Basically near the top and just being blown, the heat blows in like that. Okay, well, so tell me, is this spray dryer on the fire or off the fire? The spray dryer is being heated by a fire, right? There's a furnace over here, but is this on the fire or off the fire? Now, how are you going to decide? The question is like this, should it depend on how many feet away it is? Let's say the spray dryer is 50 feet tall and the thing's on the bottom, so is that too far? Maybe this depends on the relative to how big the thing is. Does it depend on how hot the chamber is? You can think of a dozen ways to think of it. What should have to be decided is on the fire or off the fire. Okay? So, first I'm going to tell you what I've heard from Rabbi Belsky, Rabbi Schefter, and Rabbi Hyman said the same thing as well. Then we'll talk a drop of that right into it. they have all said that their understanding is what makes something be considered on the fire or off the fire, in this kind of a case, is like this. See, what would happen if you turned on the burner, the fire, and you had no fan blowing air into the chamber? You just had the fire on, but no chamber there. Would this chamber get hot? Would it not get hot?
Say it again. You have what?
If the fire would be on, the furnace, one of these places where there's a fire, if it would be on, and there would be no fan blowing the air in, would the chamber get hot? Would the chamber not get hot? If it's close enough that it would heat up the chamber by itself, and the fan just speeds things up.
To what degree?
To a cooking temperature, let's say. I don't know. But okay. If it would heat it up, the fire's right over here. It would heat up this chamber. Of course it would heat up the chamber. Just the fan helps make it go faster. Then that's considered to be on the fire. The fire is directly affecting the food in here. Excuse me. And this is considered on the fire and we
have to be able to do its job? Or
no. To just have a cooking. It would be a cooking temperature in here. That's considered on the fire. If the fire is away from the chamber, it's enough away from the chamber that without the fan it would never heat up the chamber, that's not considered to be on the fire. That's considered to be off the fire. And we look at it, there's just, heat is coming into this thing, but it's not the fire's heat that's coming into it.
So don't you run the risk, even if it's away from the fire, if it's heating it up a little bit, won't that create a vacuum within the chamber and it'll draw the heat even more?
So you're saying is that if we make a little bit of heat, it would eventually build up some kind of a vacuum that would cause even more heat to come into it.
Right.
So you're saying then it might be that if it's a little far away, it really is able to heat it up.
I'm asking if that's possible.
Of course it's possible. Okay. But let's think the other case. The spray dryer is 50 feet tall, and the fire is over here. Okay, you could stand there all day. It's not going to heat this thing up. So I'm not saying that in every case it will be obvious whether it does or doesn't, but at least we have a rule. We have a way to figure out a beginnings of how to judge, is this on the fire or is it off the fire? If it's on the fire, then it shouldn't need to leave on it. If it's off the fire, then it doesn't need to leave on it. You could catch it with hakol then.
Piping go leading from the furnace at least for a little bit of time, a little bit of distance,
If the fire is over here, the food is only up here. There's no food going to be down here.
Normally,
right. In a script, here we're talking about the fire's here. There's venting here to bring all the heat all the way up to there.
Right, it's a one-way trip. Yeah.
Right. So they all agree that that's what it is. And I will by the end of the shish tell you. I can give you a copy of this. Don't worry about it. Don't worry about the technicalities, okay? But the way you'll see here, Ravelsky said the following. He said he thought he had a riot about this issue. He said he used to think that the only time it's considered on the fire is if the fire is mamish in the chamber. If the fire is out of the chamber, it's not considered, no matter what, it's not in the fire. Even half a foot away, it's not in the fire.
Not in the chamber.
If it's not in the chamber, it's considered off the fire. What?
The spray dryers are very...
Right.
They like that.
Right. Now, wait a second. Why did he say this? So, this is a real brother Dusky. He said as well, me and Yossi learned from the class, there's three different kinds of heat, and I don't remember what they are. Okay, there's three different kinds of heat. There's radiant heat, and convection, and conduction, I think they're called. Okay? And there's three different ways that heat transfers from a heat source to a finish to a food. Okay? And in the clear, they were explaining the mild and Chesronis of the different ways of making heat. Radiant heat, that's the one that's negated to us, means that the fire, what it has direct, not contact, but direct, it faces that thing directly. This heat goes straight from the fire into the thing. Radiant heat, that the example I know is in your toaster, in your toaster oven, you have the red hot coils. Okay? That's conduction.
Yeah.
So what's the
sunlight.
It's hot over
here, but the middle could be cold. It's a ray.
It's going directly from one. Okay.
Without necessarily heat. It's going to be very cold. But the ray comes down and heat.
Okay.
Isn't that like an electro type of.
Okay, good. So Radovsky said, he thought that when we say that the fire makes a special glia and needs legal to get out of it, is because only if the fire is directly there, does it make radiant heat that hits directly on the thing. This rays, okay, whatever it is, and therefore that's the thing that needs leaving. That was he originally thought. So if the fire is out of the chamber, okay, then you don't need leaving because it won't be radiant heat. The fire is blocked, it won't be making heat. There could be other kinds of heat. If there's something in front of the fire, you won't get your radiant heat. Now, just before we go on.
There's an opening to the chamber.
So this heat will escape around it, but the direct, what he called the rays, going straight from one to the other, won't be there. There's something in the way. Now, of course, there's a question. Before we get to his riot, he decided he was wrong. The riot, according to what you're saying, that you need to have the radiant heat, in many people's ovens, in a lot of cases, you won't need leaven. You wouldn't need leaven for you. You wouldn't need leaven if you bake something in the oven. Because in my oven, if you bake, the fire is covered. The fire is underneath the thing. There's no radiant heat in that case. If you broil, there is. When you broil, the fire is on the inside. But if you just bake, you would excuse yourself from leaven in a lot of cases. If you would say such a smart that you need radiant heat.
Wouldn't that also depend on what the surface is inside?
What do you mean?
The chamber. I mean, if it's a very shiny, like a polished stainless steel, as compared to a black finish, the polished stainless steel is going to increase the radiant heat.
So you're saying that would make even more radiant heat? If that's what the spark
is. I'm asking if that.
Okay, potentially, but this whole idea of radiant heat, Rybinski started. He doesn't. He brought Rybinski. We'll talk about the Rybinski for a second. You wouldn't believe. The Tzlach says in Pesachim that at the beginning of the parable of Ketz and Tzemach, talking about how you cook the Korban Pesach, the Gemara that talks about whether you can cook the Korban, you have to roast it in the fire. What happens if you hang the animal in a chamber that used to have a fire, but no longer has a fire in it? You put a fire in, you heat it up, and then you pull the fire out, and now you just have a hot chamber. Is that considered cooked on a fire? That's the Tzli'esh. Is that considered that you cooked it on a fire? Okay, that's the Gemara talks about whether that is or is not considered Tzli'esh. For a Korban Pesach, it's not. For a Korban Pesach, it's not considered Tzli'esh. So, the Tzlach says, from the fact that you could talk about this cooking a Korban Pesach, means other Yisroelim are not a problem. He says, what about the blood that's in the animal? The blood that's in the animal, if you roast it in a fire, you're going to draw the blood out of it. And then you're going to eat the animal. But if there's no fire in the chamber, what about the blood that's absorbed into the thing? How are you going to kasher it? Forget about how you're going to cook it for a Korban Pesach. How are you going to kasher the animal, the blood that's inside the Korban Pesach? So he says, you see. So the Tzach says, you see from there that you can kasher a liver, even, that's his case, you can kasher a liver even if there's no fire, as long as it's hot. You don't have to kasher the liver on the fire. You can kasher the liver in a hot chamber also, even if there's no physical fire. If there used to be a fire, you can kasher it also. That's what he says. That's what he wants to say. And so Rybelski says, I'm going to get back to the Tzach, Rybelski says, you see from here that things are considered on the fire, even if there's no fire in the chamber. Here you're roasting, you're broiling the liver without any fire there. So you see that something that could be considered on the fire, even if there's no actual flame in the chamber. So that's, he thought that proved, this proved what he said. He had said that it depends on that the flame is in the fire.
In
the chamber, and he said, this proves that you don't have to have the flame in the chamber. Okay, now there's a few questions on what he said, which is that the Tzlach himself says, he brings this riot, but then the Tzlach says, you know, it's against the places. It's not against us. He says, if we could give a different answer, how did they get rid of the blood? Maybe they sold the animal before they put it into there. Okay, which he says, it seems that Tyson says you're allowed to salt the Korban Pesach before you put it in. Okay, so now he questions that. He wonders why Tyson, the Tzlach, is not convinced of what Tyson says, that you're allowed to salt it. That's what he has to deal with, about whether you're allowed to salt the animal or not. But when he's finished, I have to tell you that the Tzlach doesn't say it the way I said it. The Tzlach says, whenever people would come and ask me the Shia, I would tell them it's usher. That they're not allowed, that's not considered to be a broiled liver. Then I started to wonder, maybe you could make up for this reason. He doesn't, and then he says, but my reason to be Beko is not on Tarsus. So it's hard, and they says, well, maybe Tarsus is not right. So the Tzach didn't say that, it's Mutter. The Tzach does not say in the Tzach that you're allowed to broil your livers in an oven chamber without firing. That's not what he says. He says, I told people that it was awesome. And I have a reason why it might be Mutter. So what I'm saying is, to bring a riot from the Tzach, when the Tzach himself doesn't say that it's Mutter, the Tzach says it's just a reason to possibly think it's Mutter, which is not like Tarsus and not like what he used to tell people. Okay, that's Mutter. And the second thing is that the Tzach says, by Korban Pesach, the Mishnah says, this is not kosher for Korban Pesach. Okay, you're not allowed to roast the Korban Pesach like that because it's not considered Tzli'esh. The Gemara on the next block has two terutzim as to whether that pasuk of Tzli'esh that tells you that it has to be on an actual chamber, is that special for Korban Pesach, or is that a lien with the Kol HaTorah Kulo? According to the Teretz of the Gemara, that's a lien with the Kol HaTorah Kulo, so the Gemara is saying, befamish, that you have to have a real fire. When we say something is on the fire, it means on a real fire. So this whole tzlach is built really on one Teretz of the Gemara. One shot of the Gemara is that it's for Korban Pesach, one Teretz for Kol HaTorah Kulo. Okay, so according, the whole tzlach himself is only on one thing. But I have to tell you that even though we're questioning the raya from the tzlach, that happens to be the prima golem in Hagolos Kelim, that one goes to Korban Pesach. Prima golem in Hagolos Kelim says exactly this thing. He says that if you take a kli, you cook food in an oven that had no that used to have a fire on it, and then you took the fire out of it, and then you cook the food into it, that kli needs to be cooked. It's a prima golem right in Hagolos Kelim of exactly this case. It comes from Mogen Avraham. Because this, there's, we understand a sorrow for this. There was a fire here. It's not just, hot. There was a fire here. Fire was taken out. It's still considered to be on the fire. So Prima Golem says that thing is considered Alaish. And you need Leibon afterwards. He's talking about Mamashar case. We don't have to go over to the carbon paper.
Does it depend how hot it is in the chamber?
We'll get to it in a second. Right. We're going to get there. That's the third rule. David, then yes, our second rule. I'm going to ask you to hold that for a second. Right. So far we have two rules. These are the two. Two of the simple rules, which are you only leave one if there's a dry product being cooked, a piece of meat, a piece of bread, or something like that, and you only leave one if the food is being cooked on a fire or close to a fire or with an electric coil. But if you have some kind of other heat source or you're off the fire, then there's no leave one. Then you never have.
Or a kid that was once on a fire.
Or a kli, right, that's correct. We're saying that a kli that was once on the fire, that's correct. Yes. We should get that in there. It's a kli that's either in the fire now, close to the fire, or used to be on the fire. That's all considered to be, that's the kli that needs to be. Yes, you're right. That's the kli that needs to leave. But other kli don't. So now, we're going to get to other things in a second, but just to pause at this point, the reason to say that a spray dryer doesn't need to be filled, okay, is based on that second rule. In many cases, the spray dryer is not close enough to the fire, and therefore doesn't need to leave. Okay, we will talk more about that in a different week as to whether, how we apply that to a spray dryer, okay, and some of the history of how spray dryers are designed and how we catch them. It's a whole history, whatever it is. Okay, but that's potentially in theory, okay, we're not doing it right now, but in theory, that's how you would decide whether, it's not just a spray dryer, any dryer. We're going to talk about, Mirtz Hashem, in other weeks, other dryers. If you have a fluid bed dryer, well, how do I know if you need to leave it or Hagolah? Okay, so people will focus on making Hagolah. You have to first decide, does it need to leave it or Hagolah? So these are the things to decide. At this place that I was at the other day that had the Cheres, they also had a furnace that was obviously needed to leave one. Okay, and it was in a big, huge furnace with a fire burning in it, like Gehenna, burning right inside it. Okay, So you have to first decide if the dryer needs or doesn't need. Okay, so we'll talk about the different kinds of dryers.
What is a fluid bed dryer?
Fluid bed dryer. We'll do it differently. Okay, that would be part of it as we get to other dryers. So what a fluid bed dryer is. It's a different kind of dryer that heats with hot air. But sometimes that hot air has a fire burning there. And sometimes it does. Sometimes it has steam coils. So you got to know which one it does before you decide how you're going to catch it. Okay, we'll get to those. Okay, we'll do that in a different week of all the different dryers. Okay, so we have two of the rules. Now, there's the Mirtz Hashem, two more rules. One is like this. One is from Rabbi Belsky. It's his own. This is his own. Absolutely, completely his own svara, but we will hear there's a lot of basis to what he says, which is, he says that if the kli, this is what you mentioned before, if the kli is never gets hotter than 200 degrees, Fahrenheit, never gets hotter than 200 degrees, don't leave people. He says, the person can talk about the leave is because the fire has such a strength that makes the kli go in so deeply. He says, how could it be that if it's less than 200 degrees, he said, in less than 200 degrees, you could put your hand into there and it wouldn't get out. It's not the kind of thing that's uncomfortable and you could sit there and not be affected by that thing. So how could it be that you could say the fire has this really tremendous strength and it can push a bleed into something when it's mama's just warm, not to touch, to put your hand into it. If you put your hand into it wouldn't be terribly uncomfortable. And therefore, it's hard to believe that that's the kind of strong fire that Chazal were talking about.
I can't put your hand in 20 degrees.
That's what he said. I don't know.
Try it. Try
it.
You don't feel it.
Not to touch it in the 20 degrees. Put it in the chamber.
Put it on your pocket.
And then let it sit warm up and stick your hand in. He says it's not a problem. It would not.
Try it today.
It's hard to believe. He has his riots. said the bleed has to go too strongly, it has to be, you need legal when it's such a warm thing. And there's an example of that.
200 degrees, you got that number by...
That's for the shrimp.
But listen, around 200
it's like
degrees,
the 190.
Around 200 degrees is when collagen starts to melt in a piece of meat. Okay. So if that has any connection to how, if something is considered fatty and it goes throughout the entire meat, okay, that's how it happens.
Okay, fine, good. So maybe that's a riot.
Now, but I understand spray dryers are always over 200.
No, we're not spray dryers now. We're just talking about the rules in general. What needs legal? No, but there is an example of this. There is a carnivore dryer. We'll get to it. There are some foods that need to be dried at a very low temperature. The heat will ruin the product. So you want to dry it, but you don't want to use it with a lot of heat. So what you do is you dry it for a long time at a low temperature. Okay?
And it changes from liquid to powder?
No. This doesn't go. Look, this is things that are reasonably solid, and you're trying to get a little bit of moisture off. You're like trying to like evaporate the moisture.
You use spray dryers for that?
This is not a spray dryer. No, not for a spray dryer. No,
this is just a different kind of a dryer.
Like a dehydrator.
Yeah.
Now, so those, even then, it's usually hot as toast to be. But there's a real example of things that will be less, which is the way you make this. You could try it home. Okay. Which is the way you make meringue cookies. The way you're supposed to really make meringue cookies. Meringue cookies are made of eggs and sugar. You whip up eggs and sugar, and then you don't bake them. If you stick them into a hot oven, you'll have nothing. It'll burn. And the sugar will burn. What you do is, the way you're supposed to really do it is, you're supposed to heat up your oven, turn it off, and after the oven is off, then you stick the things in. You're supposed to have just a warm chamber to heat them up. And they stay in the warm chamber for 5-10 minutes, and then they're considered ready. You're not supposed to cook it in a hot fire. You're supposed to cook it in just a warm chamber. That's what it's supposed to go into. Okay, so those kind of things, there was a real case, but that's the kind of a thing where you might be cooking it at less than 200 degrees. Okay, it's not usual that you would cook something at less than 200 degrees. It's not, there are dryers that do it all, so it's not such a common idea. Even the low temperature dryers are hotter usually than that. But in a meringue cookie, it's an example that you cook it at a very low temperature. So, and it was monitored a real case where they needed to cut, so needed to kosher. And the pan, if you think about it, the pan that the cookie's sitting on, it's a dry product sitting on right onto the pan in the fire, so it should need leaving, and they were let off the hook for this. But there's no MacArthur, we don't have a riot, so this is almost completely a scrum. And the fourth and the last rule is that this one has very firm basis in it, which is that the dry product that's on the fire has, the only things that need leaving are the things that are in direct contact with that dry product. That means is, if I put challah into a baking pan, and I bake the challah into that baking pan, the pan needs leibun to be kosher for Pesach. But the oven chamber does not need leibun. The oven chamber was used to cook dry product right on the fire, but the oven chamber does not need leibun gummo. The oven chamber, it does have bleas, but those bleas, well, maybe challah is not a good example, it does have, we'll assume it has bleas, but the bleas that it has do not need leibun gummo. Okay, and it's almost a precarious thing. Even though Hagolah Shalos in Tuf Nimalos and Tuf Nim Days, in Tuf Samachalos, it tells you how to kosher your oven. Okay, it's there, just how to kosher your oven. As a side thing, how to kosher your oven. And what you do is, says you fill up the floor of the oven. They used to bake on the floor of the oven. You fill up the floor of the oven with coals, and that's how you kosher your oven. So, I think it's smoking up from says, he says, wait a second. He says, what about the roof of the oven? What about the whole rest of the oven? What happened? You only koshered the floor. You don't fill up the whole thing with coals, you just fill the floor, you cover the floor with coals. So to which he says, the rest of the oven doesn't need leibun gomer. The rest of the oven doesn't need leibun kal or hakala. Well, the heat coming off of all those coals is going to make a leibun kal on the rest of the oven. The floor, where you put the actual bread, that needs leibun gomer. The rest of the chamber doesn't. Okay.
He uses the same sheet. Let's say there's a rim around it, like 2 hours, 2 inches, you know, nothing goes on. On a belt dryer. You only have
gold
on the part that it touches, not on the...
No, I'm not saying that part.
You think
if this
would be... How do you know? The oven might be constructed out of one cell.
Maybe the blades spread like that all the way up. Yeah. Okay. That's a good question. Maybe that has to do with how far you think the blades go. You think it's mom just on the spot that touched the glue? Okay, that could be... I can't say that it's not true. I wasn't trying to say it. I didn't mean to say mom is only the 4 inches that have it and not the interface. But I meant just to say not the whole chamber or not... But in an oven, we said the oven belt needs leibun gomer, but the oven chamber doesn't need leibun gomer. It's only the belt itself that we have to do leibun, we'll replace it. The rest of the oven just needs leibun kal or hagol, which is easy, relatively easy to do. It's the belt that causes the problems. Okay, and of course, now I do have to tell you that there is a prima galla who says that. Okay, prima galla who says that if you have a bleed from a dry product rising up, it causes whatever it hits also needs to leave. But it's very much not accepted. Okay, there's such a prima galla that says like that, but it's not accepted. And we say that only the things that actually have contact with the iser, with the dry iser, they're the ones that need hagola. But everyone else holds that the things that rise out of the food, let's say the piece of meat that's on in your oven, the things that come up are liquids. That's treated as a liquid. So when the bleed rises up from the piece of meat and hits the roof of your oven, it's not a dry thing. The people says, well, if it's a dry thing in your oven, then the bleeds that are hitting it are dry bleeds. And everybody else says is that no, the bleeds that are coming up are vapors, are liquids that are coming out of it, and there what hits the top is considered a liquid hits the top. And therefore it needs to have that's what everybody argues says. Okay?
Does it matter what the surface is made of? I mean, one surface might be very porous, if it's a brick oven.
That's right. Yes. So what the difference is that if the surface is so porous that it's a klicheres, then it needs hagola no matter what. Even if you keep cooked up a pot of soup in there, you need leaven. If it's such a porous surface, then that's what cheres is. That it's such a porous surface that you need leaven no matter what you do. You can't do hagola to it. But regular metal surfaces are considered that they can have hagola to them. Except, so we're talking about this, but if you did directly on it, that's a different, it's not because of the surface of it, it's because of the fire, right. And needs leaven. That's a...
So if you have circulating heat, like a spray dryer or and it starts off liquid at the top, but by the time anything hits the bottom, because of the circulation, instead of rising, it's falling.
Yes.
It's dry at the bottom, anything touching the walls, maybe the bottom of the spray dryer is what then requires leaven, because it's dry that has been touching the...
Yes, correct. The container. In a spray dryer, anything that hits the wall is dry. Liquids don't hit the wall in a spray dryer. So you're passing the walls because dry products hit them, not because liquid products hit them. So they potentially need to leave them. And the way out of it, the reason they don't need it would be because the fire is too far away that they're considered to be off the fire. Okay?
So, I said that.